When news of Queen Elizabeth's death spread across the globe last September, the world paused to acknowledge the end of an era. Ruling from 1952 until her death on September 8, 2022, Queen Elizabeth II was the longest reigning monarch in British history. 2,000 dignitaries and guests attended her funeral on September 19th, and the funeral procession itself included 4,000 military personnel. Included in that procession were five members of Hamilton's Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, and included among them was the regiment's pipe major, Scott Balanson. Longtime Hamiltonians will be familiar with the Balanson name. Scott's parents are Joan and the late Morley Balanson, who was a veteran of the Korean War and a stalwart member of Hamilton's Jewish community. Scott's paternal grandfather, Henry, was the publisher of Hamilton's thriving Yiddish-language newspaper of the 1930s and 40s. But this episode of the Spiel on Hamilton belongs to Scott, who in the following conversation explains the reason for his family's attachment to the late Queen and what it was like to march in her funeral procession. Have a listen. It's now my great pleasure to welcome Scott Balanson to the Spiel on Hamilton. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm very well. Good morning, Wendy, and thank you for the invitation to participate. When you reached out to me, it was in regards to the most recent events in the passing of Queen Elizabeth and my honor and privilege to attend as a member of the Canadian Armed Forces Reserves in Hamilton, the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders of Canada, Princess Louise is specifically my Infantry Army Reserve Unit. I've been a member of the Argyles since 1981. When I joined on strength as a soldier, but I had actually started in 1975, the end of 1975, leading into 1976, learning to be playing the bagpipes in the Argyles. Wow. My father was Morley Leon Balanson, and his brother was Robert Balanson, his eldest brother, who was a doctor and served from 1939 to 1946. And his other brother, Alec, was a wireless operator and a gunner in the Royal Canadian Air Force and was killed in World War II in the island of Malta. That's how I ended up in the Army, because after World War II and my father demobilized before being sent overseas, he then rejoined the Army and served with the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry in the Korean War and at the very significant historical Battle of Cap Yung. Again, after he demobilized, returning to Canada, he ended up joining the reserves and he ended up joining the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders of Canada. So he ended up joining a kilted unit in the 1950s. And when he met my mother, it turned out that her family had immigrated from the United Kingdom, had Scottish and English and Irish roots. So that's a kind of a curious thing. The Scottish connection is on my mother's side, but I ended up in a Highland regiment through my father.
Right. And let's just pause for a moment to say that your mother is Joan Balanson.
That's correct. Yeah. And she's alive. My father passed away at the age of 93 and a half, 3 years ago, and lived a wonderful, long, productive life in Hamilton with not only serving in the military, but having taken over his father's print shop, International Press, that published the Yiddish newspaper, The Jewish Voice of Hamilton.
I'm glad you brought that up, Scott, because I was very involved in a museum exhibit on that Yiddish newspaper because I felt obviously an attachment to that wonderful story. So your grandfather was Henry Balanson, who was the editor of that newspaper and had a very colorful personality and a rich history.
That is correct. He was the the editor, the publisher, the typesetter, everything. And I do recall your direct involvement helped do the historical display at Beth Jacobs Synagogue. I think there was also an event at the Workers' Heritage Arts Center that yes. Covered that off in Hamilton. So due to the efforts of people such as yourself in not only the media, but other members of the community who are very intent on preserving the history of the Jewish community in Hamilton, these very special and important and interesting aspects of culture of Jewish life in Hamilton have been preserved. So the connection for the Argyles to Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth, is an extremely long connection. She was colonel in chief of the Argyles prior to being made the monarch, when she was still Princess Elizabeth. And this is very common because of our connection, Canadian connection to the British military and Great Britain in general, that most regiments have colonels in chief. So it's an honorary position, but they are often members of the royal family. But there's also mm-hmm. in more modern times, you know, well-known Canadian personalities have taken on these roles as honorary colonels, etc. But we've had this long-standing relationship, and I believe the Queen came to Canada 22 times in her reign as monarch. And in a number of those occasions, besides her other duties, she visited the Argyles to present colors, which are the regimental flags that we carry in 1959. My first parade for royalty was Princess Margaret when I was 15. She came to Canada. And I wasn't even on strength as a soldier then. I was just a boy piper. But following that, in 1984, she came to a large military tattoo in Toronto, a tattoo being a musical extravaganza. Okay. And we had an opportunity as the Argyles and the other regiments that she was colonel in chief with to actually meet her at a garden party. And I actually got to talk to her in 1984.
Wow, that's incredible. Tell me what that was like.
It was extremely, extremely surprising to me. Again, as a young soldier, I would have just been 19. The garden party was at Fort York in Toronto, and they had it set up very, very smartly, like a very serpentine winding course for her to walk through, so the maximum number of people would be able to see her. And so my mother, my aunt, my grandmother, obviously my father, were all there invited to this garden party. And the Queen walked through and graciously greeted members of the regimental family. And as is her habit, a very attention to detail thing, whenever the Queen would be meeting with specific groups, she was wearing an Argyle brooch on a bright yellow outfit with one of her very stylish hats for the days. She walked past me and then actually kind of stopped and came back a couple of paces.
Wow.
She was escorted by the colonel at the time, John Dinsmore, and honorary colonel, I believe, Colonel Young. I did the protocol, which is to salute the Queen. And she said to me, you're in the band. So she recognized that my uniform was distinct from the soldiers of the regiment, because we were a plaid and a cock feather in our Glengarry and our cross belts and waist belts. And I said, yes, Your Majesty, this is correct. And then she said, you have a large band, which we did have a lot of members, but I guess I was a little nervous. And I thought she said, you're a large man, because I'm 6'2". And I just said, yes, yes, ma'am. And one of my friends was standing there with a 35 millimeter camera, and he took the most beautiful, beautiful picture of us. It's hanging in the band room where we do all our rehearsal and training down at the James Street Armories there. And when I got the picture, I wrote that little interaction on the back of the picture. So I think I'm quoting it almost verbatim. I haven't looked at it in years, but
that's an incredible story, Scott. Wow.
Yeah, but that was my first interaction. And I got to tell you, I was quite awestruck with her. She's extremely charismatic and carries herself with great poise and dignity. And that has been my experience over the years. The one probably most personal interaction that we had as a regiment with the Queen and as a family for us happened in 2002. So on her jubilee, she came to Canada and came. One of the scheduled events was to present the Argyles with new colors again, because the ones from 1959 were aging. And there was a very, very well orchestrated large event at Copps Coliseum, which I think holds like 18,000 plus patrons. And there was a fabulous pre-show or pre-event dancing by members of the Indigenous community, I think from Six Nations in The Queen then came and the battalion paraded to present colors, to get presented new colors. And my father, Morley, actually did a prayer in Hebrew. Wow. As part of the consecration. But the most curious part of this was my wife Carmen and I had our children, Kate and Max. Max was 5 years old, and the colonel of the regiment at the time, during the planning phase, this was a 2-year buildup to this, Colonel Elms, had the clever idea that they would get Max a complete 5-year-old sized uniform that the soldiers would normally wear, which a kilt and a coatee, which is the jacket, and Glengarry spats and a sporn, which is the small hair covered purse for that does Highlanders wear in front of their kilts. And Max, along with at the time Colonel Compton's daughter Katie, another Katie, presented the Queen with flowers.
Wow.
And there's, again, some very good video footage, I think, from CHCH TV, but also some good pictures were in the Spectator at the time. And it was a long day for a 5-year-old, but he carried it off beautifully and looked terrific. And that little uniform, because it's a very, very good quality, made by a company in Barrie, Ontario, is still within the regimental kit stores and has been worn by other children in the regiment for some weddings and some Remembrance Day ceremonies, etc. So,
wow, what an incredible memory for your family to have for generations. Just beautiful. Scott went on to describe the week he and his fellow Argyles, along with 1,800 other military personnel, spent on a British Army base. Their days spent in meticulously executed drills that prepared them for the big event. We pick up the story on the day of the Queen's funeral.
Probably first most extraordinary experience, besides just the fact that the whole thing was a whirlwind event, was that after a full day of rehearsal, the next day of full rehearsal involved then going at night to London to Wellington Barracks, which is the current guards establishment. And then the location of the parade was completely locked down. There was nobody there. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, we simulated the parade at night, everyone in their full dress uniforms, the household cavalry, et cetera. So the lifeguards and the Blues and Royals, all the horses and every aspect of the parade was completely executed from the way it would be on the day. The day of the funeral, we left very, very early in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. Again, just trying to move all these buses, even though the streets were completely isolated, and fencing was put along all the side streets, and there was civilian marshals in safety vests, and then military police and civilian police absolutely everywhere along the route, just to bring that number of buses into an area, debus all the people, move them to where they have to go, required hours and hours and hours of work. Again, box lunches, bottles of water. The first phase, we moved from Wellington Barracks to the Abbey, where the funeral was going to be taking place. The crowds along the street and in the parks were just so many people. And there was a real quiet dignity, but you could just see, it was just every single person had their phone camera on. As we had driven in to the location to go to Canada House, the people had been lining up to go visit the casket, to walk by, to pay their respects. And the line was, we had heard, 9 kilometers deep and taking 24 hours for people to cycle through it. And that was the magnitude of people paying their respects. The route then took the parade from the cathedral up what they call the Mall, which is that very wide, beautiful tree-lined street with the Union Jacks hanging from the posts on either side, and it leads up to Buckingham Palace. And the parade rounded the corner onto the mall, and it's just such an extraordinary experience just to see that many people and to know that you're, you know, I don't know whether it really sunk in it for me at that time. I still said when I came home, it was still surreal, the whole experience. Mm-hmm. When we got up to the Waterloo Arch, there's a large park, and the contingents marched into their pre-designated positions that we had practiced for the days leading up to this and in the actual night practice. And then we stood at attention for almost an hour and 20 minutes, which is a long time for any body of soldiers to stand at attention. But it required that degree of discipline and patience and to show reverence to the solemnity of the occasion. The gun carriage came up. The honorary colonels were assembled in front of us for our contingents. And I couldn't really see the other contingents, but I believe there was a lot of other concurrent activity. There's a very structured process to transfer the casket to the hearse, where then it continued on to its final destination. I believe it's St. George's Chapel, or but I may be incorrect in that exact pronunciation of the location. And then after that process, the return to barracks involved quick marches. So it was quite refreshing after having stood for, you know, an hour and 20 minutes, I think it might have almost been an hour and 30 minutes just to kind of shake out the muscles. And we returned right to Wellington Barracks. That's a lot of stuff. You have any questions? I'm sorry. I kind of
fascinating. I mean, really, you opened up a whole new world. I know that while you were there, you mentioned to me when I first reached out to you a couple of weeks ago that your mom, meanwhile, is in Hamilton, glued to her television set. Can you just say something about your mom's attachment to the Queen and what this meant to her?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, Wendy. So as I kind of indicated at the beginning, my mom's and my dad's, you know, lifelong, you know, connection to our amazing community, to Hamilton, they broadened each other's lives by virtue of the fact that they both had military connections. My mother's grandfather died of wounds from World War I. Her uncle was a prisoner of war in World War I. Her father served in the Navy in the interwar years. That's actually some funny stories of how he got becalmed in a Navy sailboat with my grandmother in Hamilton Harbor, and they got in very late, I'm sure. As well, as I had already talked about my father's military life and his brother's, my mom's whole life changed when she got to meet my father and they got married, and she got exposed to this life in the Argyles. Because in the late 1950s and early 1960s, the regiment was made up mostly of serving veterans. So it was a very different culture. The peacekeeping role that Canada was so fundamental in developing under, you know, Prime Minister Pearson hadn't really started until that period in time. So it had been a conflict-based army. And my mother is just an incredibly curious person and always trying to learn things and asks extremely insightful questions about stuff. Throughout the years, at some, you know, milestones and high profile events, whether it is for the Argyles, for the Korean War veterans, my mom would accompany my father to these various events that, you know, unless we preserve the history and the magnitude, the challenges of being human and the horrors of war, you know, where sadly we see what's going on in the Ukraine, and my father's family had emigrated from the Ukraine from Kiev and Odessa and Katrinoslav. So when I have conversations with my mother, it's often she gives an incredible amount of credit to these experiences with my father is really broadening her horizons. And her mother was an my grandmother, Isabel Barker, was extremely passionate about the Queen. She had picture books and was very honored to come to the garden party in 1984, to the presentation of colors in 2002, et cetera. So as I talked to my mother upon my return, these were the themes that she was just emphasizing, how, you know, life could have gone many, many different directions and does for all of us. But as a result of this military connection, we have this much stronger connection to royalty in the United Kingdom. So I think that's the theme that that I find when I have the conversations, not just her curiosity about things and wanting to hear the details and learning about it, but just knowing that her grandson was there to talk to the Queen and that right. I had an opportunity to interact with her. You know, I know they're just people, but they're people that have had a profound impact on our history and our country's identity and independent identity and connected identity. And I know that there's been a lot of challenges discussing the colonial history of this country as we come to terms with and reconciling aspects of the residential school system, et cetera. But there's also many good things, rule of law and constitution and peacekeeping and being a beacon for hopefully future generations of immigrants come to make this country a better, stronger place. It's so interesting to me because my regiment, although it's a Highland regiment, has people of every faith, gender, and race joining it over the years. It's fantastic. As I said, my father was a Jewish Highlander. He was right. A regimental sergeant major. There's there's people from Southeast Asia and Commonwealth and non-Commonwealth countries joining the Canadian Armed Forces, and it's an incredible institution. It's a large institution, but those are the themes that I have those conversations with my mom about.
The Spiel on Hamilton podcast is made possible through the generosity of the Allen and Millie Gould Family Foundation. The Spiel on Hamilton is a production of the Hamilton Jewish News, hosted and produced by me, Wendy Schneider, and edited by Jennifer Howe of Executed Events. If you have any comments, questions, or stories you would like to hear on the show, please email wschneider@jewishhamilton.org. We would love to hear from you. Make sure to subscribe to the Spiel on Hamilton on your favorite podcast platform to learn more about this wonderful community.